Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for downloading and listening to our Big Time Talker podcast. Burke Allen here at our studios in Washington, D.C. The show brought to you by our buddies at SpeakerMatch.com. SpeakerMatch, the world's largest online virtual speakers bureau. And you may say to yourself, self, what does that mean exactly? Well, that means if you are a platform speaker and you're looking for places to speak, Speaker Match is for you. Maybe you're a meeting planner and you need speakers. Speaker Match is the place for you. Check it out, speakermatch.com. Hey, we have new episodes of the Big Time Talker every Tuesday at Spotify, Apple, iTunes, iHeart, wherever you download podcasts. So please subscribe and tell a friend and say only good things. David Ross is our guest today. He is the award-winning author of an interesting book called And Sometimes Why. David and I got a chance to tag up briefly down in Miami when he walked across the stage and picked up his reader's favorite award for this book. He is a teacher. He resides in New York State. And I will have to say that, David, this is in the first time on the Big Time Talker podcast, and we've done now over 300 episodes of this very program, the first time we have ever done an interview with an author who wrote a book about a letter of the alphabet. So you've got
that
going for you.
Yeah.
You got
that
going.
Pleasure to be on.
This one, when I learned about this book, I just thought, well, I thought a bunch of things. The first thing I thought, frankly, was this David Ross guy's mind doesn't work like anybody else's mind. To come up with the concept and the idea for this book, And Sometimes Why, which is sort of targeted towards kids, but there's a lot happening in this book. And I just think it's a cool concept. And I'm not sure if you can do this, but I'm going to ask you to give sort of the elevator pitch. You know, somebody walks up to you, at a bookstore and says, hey, what is your book about, this book about the letter Y? How do you answer them? What do you say?
Sure. Oh, okay. Well, the premise is that X, a consonant, and O, a vowel, have a child, Y, and each of the parents sort of has expectations that Y is going to be like them, and they are disappointed because Y is neither like a consonant or a vowel solely. And so when Y starts acting differently, everyone takes notice, the other letters take notice, and questions are raised, and the parents struggle a little bit with coming to terms with their child being different. So it's a book about diversity. And after a number of conversations, the parents finally realize, hey, Y says, sometimes I'm a vowel, sometimes I'm a consonant, you know, why not? And the parents finally get it, as do the other letters of the alphabet.
So it is a simple story.
Mm-hmm.
With complex undertones, and there's a lot of compassion in there, and and there's a lot of affirmation of the letter Y. So and I teased you a little bit in the introduction about you having a mind like no other, but where in the world did this idea, how did this happen in your brain? What's going on up there? Was this a late night of Mexican food that made this happen?
if only it were that. That's a good question. So it might not surprise you to find that I come from a neurodivergent family. My wife took a strong interest in neurodivergence and what it entailed because of our sons having specific qualities.
And people may not know what that term is, so go ahead and spell that out for us.
Sure. I think the simplest way of describing it is, in fact, that all of us think differently. We have our different areas where our comfort zones, where we function better, and other areas possibly where it's not. We have more difficulty making sense as we see others do.
Maybe okay,
that's what I'm describing. So I'm a teacher. I teach English as a second language. And so some of my students are very visual. Their comfort zone is I write on the board and they copy. And other students are audio. And so they want me to repeat things. And I think that that's true of everybody, is we just have different aptitudes. And so back to your question, I my interest in grammar and whatnot made go the letter Y a go-to for this. But I was interested in just how we represent diversity and how we work with it. So it
Was there a
also.
eureka moment where you said, "That's it, I'm going to use the alphabet"?
I like the way it fell into place. It suddenly sounded like, oh, this is bigger than it appears, is probably, when you talk about diversity, is it sometimes it's difficult to distill it in a way that young kids can get. And I thought that this was sort of speaking that language with them. Like people might understand that, seeing as it's taught in second grade, third grade, young children might be exposed to that, but they might not be able to see some of the deeper implications or it as a metaphor, for example.
How old are the kids that you teach English as a second language to?
My students are 9th grade to 12th grade, and so because we get refugees in, they can be anywhere from 14 to 20, so a pretty wide range.
That sounds like it can be a very satisfying job when you see the light bulb go off. Do you have those
Very,
kind of
very much.
moments?
Oh yeah, so much so. And I often get asked, well, how do you do it if you speak English? And in our school, they speak 45 different languages. And so it's fascinating to see everyone go from their own separate ways of thinking to be able to communicate in class in English. It's wonderful.
David Ross is our guest today. The book is And Sometimes Why. It's a Reader's Favorite Award winner and has received 5.0, 5 stars in reviews. And not only an award winner, a gold medal award winner, because it says something that's pretty different and interesting. And would you say that part of your goal was to sort of get this into the hands of kids and moms and dads and schools that want to get behind diversity? Is that sort of the secret evil plan behind the cute little book about the
A secret.
alphabet?
Well, the secret's out now, I guess. Okay.
Yep, we blew
So,
it.
I really want to foster dialogue. And I think that a lot of times younger people need to be exposed to more basic ideas, basic in the sense of fundamental, when they're still receptive. A lot of times, I think that what happens is older people understand ideas sometimes in a more abstract fashion. We're accustomed to working in abstractions, and younger kids feel things often more deeply. My sons are very empathetic. They just want to root for the underdog, almost not knowing what the issues are because they feel before they think sometimes, right? So I wanted to give a context in which this dialogue could flourish and that people could say, like, why is, well, it's hard to sometimes use language. Why is Y being isolated? Or, right? So, yes, very much so. And to that end, actually, what I did was I rewrote the book as a play to be performed in elementary school. And I was lucky to have someone run the play, and it came off nicely and also showed me how ways could become better. So.
When you were putting this whole thing together, you had to have a visual component and you had to have an illustrator. And I read on your website that you didn't go to Illustrators or Us down on the corner there in upstate New York. You've got a guy who's halfway around the world. Is it Romania? Is that right?
That's exactly right. Yes, very good.
How does that even work? How does an author tag up with an illustrator in Romania? Because I'm guessing you're not hopping on an airplane every other weekend to make this all happen. Is it all done on
No.
Zoom? And have you ever met the illustrator? It's fascinating.
Well, my wife is Romanian, so that puts us closer, right? And in fact, the book that I wrote before this one, which was called Yenta Claus, was illustrated by a friend of her cousin who's an artist.
Okay.
And that illustrator is married to the illustrator who illustrated And Sometimes Why. And they have
Gotcha.
their own art company, a graphic design company called Editora Intaglio. Wonderful people. And the nuts and bolts of being able to collaborate from afar have never been easier. I mean, look where you are, and here we are in the same room.
DC. Yeah. Yeah.
But it does take a certain kind of preparation. I would certainly do it again. They're great people.
So I guess it helps with your wife being Romanian, so the language barrier is gone. Would he send you, what would you say, okay, I want it to kind of look like this, and then he would send you artwork back and you would go, nah, this isn't exactly that. And is
Yeah.
that sort of thing?
And he would also provide some insight into how he thought things might be laid out. So we moved from my initial vision was a little bit more on the nose, so to speak. And so we moved to the idea that as Y was changing and be finding new forms of self-expression, we moved towards different fonts and different colors as a means to get in, to show growth. Because otherwise, I did not want it to be anthropomorphized where Y would have eyes and a nose and, you know, silly stuff. And I didn't want that. So it's harder to work with that. It's a very austere format, actually. So he was really good in bringing it to life.
Yeah, I guess
So,
you're right. If you don't have the eyes and the nose, it's tougher to show emotion and it's tougher to do
right.
all kinds of stuff. But you did not want that. Why was that in your mind as something that you didn't want to have happen?
I wanted something just a touch more elegant. At that point, I thought that the dialogue was easily accessible to the reader, and so I didn't want it to seem comic. I wanted it to have that certain resonance that would elicit more and deeper emotions. So.
David Ross is our guest today, by the way, on the Big Time Talker podcast. The book is called And Sometimes Why. It's a gold medal award winner from Reader's Favorite. Really cool, interesting concept. I have a good friend here in Washington, D.C., David, who runs a diversity and inclusion company. And as someone who knows nothing about that business, I was fascinated to learn from her that somewhere along the way, the words diversity and inclusion became almost dirty words. It was like it's kind of a bad thing.
Right.
And I don't understand that. And I wonder if your insight as someone who works in a school system where you said kids speak 45 different languages and you've got sounds like the United Nations of your high school right there.
Feels like it.
Is the old saw that we have more in common than more that brings us together than the more that separates us? Is that true? And what's your thought on how diversity has become a dirty word?
Thank you. So that's I find that a fascinating question as well. My insight derives from the word tolerance. And so in speaking about the book and in speaking with my wife and other people about is our goal tolerance? And I moved from that to embracing diversity. I think that's a much more holistic, heartful, a felt sense. And I think that the easiest way to see why critics of some of these terms feel the way they do is possibly some, if you look at the word tolerance and then you move towards, does anyone want to be tolerated?
Put up with.
Yeah,
I'm
right. I
going to
mean,
put up with that shirt,
no.
David.
I don't. Maybe others do. So embrace to me speaks more to how we need to really accept other people in a, again, a more heartfelt manner, not just tolerate them.
And when you see these kids at your school who come from all corners of the globe and have these different cultural traditions, you want to, I think, protect some of that culture and some of that heritage and history. But when you see them come together, are there commonalities?
Yes. And
What's it take to get there?
yeah, okay. Well, one of the interesting things, just in a working sense, is that if I am teaching them English, I certainly don't want them to lose their first languages, right? And
Okay.
so if in fact they continue to study their native languages, they're developing skills that transfer more easily into their learning of English anyway. So it's a win-win situation. You continue studying your native language. That's great. That's how you keep your culture and your language alive. But it's also helps you develop linguistic skills. So it we come together recognizing that we're using English because it's I don't know if we can still say lingua franca because it's a touch outdated at this point, but we come together because this is what allows us to communicate, and then we go home and we spread that and share that with our families. So it takes that kind of understanding on the parts of the students as well. And because they have a whole lot of not only sympathy but empathy for one another, the classes are actually a pleasure. People are happy to work together.
David Ross is our guest today. He's the award-winning author of the children's book, In Theory, Sometimes Why, and In and Sometimes Why. It's a picture book for kids in elementary school that helps demonstrate sort of the concept of diversity. And you've got a mom and a dad or a constant and a vowel, and out pops baby Y. And as baby Y gets older, Y becomes more Y-like, right?
Right.
And things get a little muddy there. You talked about and you used a term that I frankly I was not familiar with, the neurodivergent family. How tough is it for the whys of the world, especially when there's students in 2024? Is it better now than it was 50 years ago? Is it maybe not better because you have all the aspects of social media bullying, and every individual over the age of 10 has a cell phone, and things can happen lickety-split. What's your vantage point as an educator and an author who's really dialed into this world?
Right. Well, I believe that most of us have felt different in at some time.
Oh,
And
sure.
so, right, I think that's a common human experience, right? So I think that unfortunately in my classes, I see that people are not necessarily seeking out contact with others directly as much as through mediated forms. And so I don't, I like to see people smile and I like to interact with people. So having a screen between me and them, despite the fact that you and I are sharing that, it's good for some things, is if I have someone next to me, I would sooner talk to them than go and on a phone.
Yep.
So those skills, it's amazing how many implications you can draw from that. But maybe the silver lining is that it's easier to seek out people who you feel akin to. So if you feel that you're different, there must be people in the world who or feel different in the same way. And so maybe it's allows access to subcultures in ways that people weren't able to do before.
You and I like to talk one-on-one in person, and we're old school that way, but maybe there's something to still be said for that, right?
Right. Agreed.
David, let me take the opposite tact here a little bit and have you speak to that. There are all kinds of people in the world who would say, look, you do you, but don't shove you on me. And what would you, David Ross, award-winning author David Ross, say to that?
I have to hearken back to a teacher that I had in high school. I was fortunate to take a philosophy class, and on the wall was a poster that has stuck with me for these many years. And it said, "Your right to swing your arm ends at the tip of my nose." And I've loved that. And I find that nowadays, there's something that's easy to understand about that, except now that what happens if someone's playing their music really loudly? Where's the tip of my nose, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that when we embrace tolerance, excuse me, when we embrace diversity, yeah, you see, there we go. Is it when we embrace diversity, we it draws upon us, requires us to be empathetic and at least understanding that other people have different wants and needs. And I don't think that there's a hard rule for that, because I think that we have too many contexts in which we're called upon to act differently and recognize other people acting differently. But it's a challenge that people need to be made aware of. Like, it's important to take that one on. So that's.
You self-published this book, and I wonder if that was a choice because you wanted to get it out there, did publishers, were they skittish about it? Tell me about that choice to self-publish the book.
Well, publishing, the publishing world. I had a previous experience with a publisher who wasn't forthcoming about some of the aspects of the books that we published. I co-authored it this time instead of had someone illustrate it. And so it was harder to accomplish what I wanted to than I thought was necessary. And so I figured I would put it out there, see who was interested, and then I expected that if it got the kind of attention I was hoping for, then a publisher would want to back it because we want to get it into the hands of anyone who wants to promote, embracing diversity. I figured there would be publishers who would be interested in that. So, working on that.
This was a way to get it out there and get people interested. Have you shared it? I'm just curious with the guidance counselor or librarians at any schools, and what kind of feedback do you get?
Yes, I have, and positive. It's really sweet to go into my school library and see my book there. It's nice. I like that.
Well, one would think that folks who are school counselors especially are going to run into issues like Y has in your book, and having something that they can put in front of those kids would make sense. And yet we do occasionally hear about books that are somewhat controversial, even in today's world, being yanked off bookshelves. So is that a fear for you that this might be a bridge too far for some people?
No, on the contrary, actually, it's a bit of a spur, in that, so I am in New York and we don't have the same, when I say we, is generally speaking, there's a bit more understanding of this difference, and especially in my school. And so sometimes I think, well, maybe there are other parts of the country that I should send 1,000 books to, and I don't know, drop them out of planes.
We're
Is
talking
that
about you, Montana. Keep your eyes up.
So, but it's the cover of the book, which shows an image of Y, also is on a rainbow background. And so the book has been embraced by the LGBTQ plus community. And so I was very interested in having people find themselves in the book. And so I was looking at diversity at a broader level, but it made me happy to think that people would be that community would find themselves in it. And it also made me aware that, back to your question, is there might be people who that would rub the wrong way. And hopefully they'll come around to seeing that, diversity is something that makes communities, and that nature is built on diversity, makes us all stronger.
That it's interesting you said that, because I wanted to talk to you about within the world of diversity and inclusion, if in your mind you had a specific subset of folks, because diversity means a lot of different things to a lot of different people, because we're all very different. As a kid growing up in the coal fields of Appalachia, there were lots of Eastern European immigrants all around me. And I remember all the horrible derogatory terms that people used every day about, the little Hungarian kid down the street, or the Polish kid, or the Italian kid, or the African American kid. And as I got older, the same thing that would happen for the gay kid or the whatever. So was there a subset that you visualized when you wrote this story, and sometimes why? Or were you trying to make this a very inclusive book about inclusion?
Yes, you put it very nicely there. So I feel fortunate in that selecting the alphabet was abstract enough that it allowed for any number of different interpretations.
Kind of
And
read into it what you want.
and it because of that, it seems less like I have an agenda, which I'm willing to say that I do have an agenda if embracing diversity is framed that way, but it wasn't specific to any subculture group of people. So my touch points were neurodivergent people. And then, because my students are diverse culturally, linguistically, ethnically. That was also a reference point. And then LGBTQ is also in my mind when I did it, and it seemed like, wait, this relates to everybody. Anyone who has felt that I want to be who I am, and for some whatever reason, people are not listening to me the way I want to be heard, is I thought that they would not only find themselves in the book and resonate with it, but that it would be a means of possibly supporting, giving voice to that difference and honoring it.
Let's wrap up with this. There's likely someone who's listening right now to this podcast who may feel different or may have someone in their family who's different. And you talked about you and your wife and your sons, and you're in a neurodivergent family, and you introduced that term to our listeners today. In broad strokes, David is someone who wrote the book on the subject, right? And you're involved in diversity every day in school. What would you tell that listener who is dealing with that, and maybe it's not going well, and maybe there's some friction there? What would you say to that person?
Continue to try to make yourself heard. And when you have difficulty reaching someone, is ask them to listen with empathy, is just to put it out there and say, in some place where you're isolated from any specific issues possibly, is just offer your own perspective and have them recognize that this is where I'm coming from. So to keep being you, is that's the simplest way I could put it.
I think that's great advice, and for the person who has a why in their social group, whether it's their family or their friend group, or maybe not in their friend group because they are different, what would you tell that person?
My take on that is possibly to start from the inside, is to recognize how you yourself, I myself am different, and I want to be honored for who I am, and no surprise that other people feel the same way. So listen with compassion, for everyone else trying to be themselves.
So I'm going to put it out there, David. I've got lots of friends of all stripes in the political spectrum. Some of them are not going to like this, but I love this book. I love what you did with it. I think it is very deserving of the gold medal. And I think, as Rodney King once said, why can't we all just get along? So kudos to you and congratulations on all your success.
Thank you so much, Burke. What a pleasure to speak with you.
That's my buddy David Ross. He's an award-winning author, and you can check him out online. The book is available everywhere. You just got to ask for it. It's the And Sometimes Why book. And cleverly enough, you can find it at andsometimeswhybook.com. David Ross is the author, and he is a gold medal award winner. Hey, thank you for listening today. Sure appreciate you being here. Fresh episodes of the Big Time Talker podcast are available for your consumption every Tuesday right here on all your favorite podcast platforms. Thanks so much to SpeakerMatch.com for sponsoring the show. Now go out and make it a great day. Bye, everybody.